Hello, everybody. This is Billy Tucci from Apostle Arts, publishers of A Child is Born, and you are listening to Darkness to Light. Thank you, and God bless.
Darkness to Light, hosted by Emily and Alan Middleton.
We aim to explore what takes place at the corner of theology and geekology.
Episode 14. Spooky, scary Scooby-Doo?
Welcome to episode 14 of Darkness to Light. This is our show where we take a look at pop culture in terms of where those stories intersect with concepts in religion, faith, theology, spirituality.
And we've talked about DC supernatural characters before on episode 2, episode 7, lucky episode 13. And since we're on a roll, let's do that one more time for Halloween.
We've talked before in feedback episodes that we have a pretty long list of potential topics for this show, and listeners add things to that list on occasion.
Periodically. Thank you, everybody.
From movies to TV to music to comic books and all sort of things. But until about 10 days or 2 weeks ago, this was not on that list. I was just working my way through the excellent and funny Scooby-Doo Team-Up series, and just in the course of reading, downloaded Volume 3 of that title from Hoopla, and then I read Issue 13, and I immediately texted you.
Yes. So, we weren't planning on doing a Halloween episode. I still think that the Over the Garden Wall is pretty much the archetypical go-to Halloween episode. I put it in our Tumblr feed again. I was going to share it on Facebook.
We did just recently talk about Justice League Dark, about a month or so ago, last episode. And I was thinking, you know, that could have qualified. If we needed a Halloween episode, that, you know, that could have fit the bill.
I actually recently recorded a commentary track for that movie, which should be coming out on Halloween on Batgirl to Oracle. So right. If you're interested in something to listen to, you can also go check that out. But I thought we were set. And then you read this book and said, no.
Now, here's the thing. Like you mentioned Over the Garden Wall. Last year, that was like your baby.
Yes.
You saw it. You saw the potential for dorkiness content. You tricked me into, you convinced me to watch it.
You watched it again this year.
I did watch it again this year. I fell in love again. Okay. I mean, you had good taste. But that was sort of your idea. So for good or ill, this baby's mine. Now, we're talking about Halloween, so I got a quick question for you. Halloween, is it just for kids? Is it just for adults? Is it more one for the other? How do you feel about the state of Halloween USA 2017?
Well, I said this last year, and I'll say it again. I do not have a dog in the Halloween fight. Mm-hmm. I have no problem with small children's going out and trick-or-treating. I have no problem with grown adults going out and getting very drunk in skimpy costumes. You do Halloween however you do Halloween. I don't really have a personal preference because I never really cared that much about Halloween. But I think that Halloween is a compelling holiday because it is kind of for everyone, but it's very different for everyone.
Now, we're not going to get into this specific topic that I'm just going to mention in this episode, but a friend of mine from a Christian background did post the provocative statement on Facebook that Halloween may be a more Christian holiday than Christmas is, at least in terms of its history. And of course, most of the Protestants who replied to his post said, "What? Huh? How? Why?"
And most of the Catholics said, "Duh."
All Saints Day, All Souls Day, hello.
It's right there.
It's in there, right there in the name. maybe that's a topic for another Halloween.
Well, and we touched on that a little bit last year. Mm-hmm. I think this year, if last year was the serious and theological one, this is the spoopy, scary skeletons version. Though, speaking of creepy, scary Scooby-Doo stories, this is not going to be about Scooby Apocalypse.
Just to clarify.
A very, very different Scooby-based property.
I was talking to Terry Colucci at church just a week or so ago, so that makes it a Dorkness Dorkness approved conversation. But he said, so, what comics you been reading lately? Because pretty much that's how most of our conversations start.
Shocked.
That's how many of them middle and end as well. But, so he asked, you know, what comics you been reading? And I know he's not totally into Rebirth like we are, so I didn't mention any of those. But I said, I'm still loving Scooby-Doo Team-Up. And his response was, I started reading Scooby Apocalypse. That's one dark book. So just make sure if you're at the library, what you had talked about maybe ordering it for the library, or when you're scanning the shelves.
Make sure it's the right Scooby book.
You don't get your team up and your apocalypse confused. One is light, airy, and fun. One is whatever the opposites of all of those words are.
Yeah, mature readers only.
I know what Terry was thinking. But it's Scooby-Doo. It can't be that dark. Yeah, it can be.
Yeah.
But this one is the exact opposite. Well, then let's talk about issue 13. This is called Don't Be a Stranger. It was written by Sholly Fish, who's written all of Scooby-Doo Team-Up. Art by Dario Brizuela, who has done most, if not all, of the art for these issues. We start at the headquarters of Team Scooby, where Daphne has opened the door on Halloween to the Phantom Stranger, sounding overly dramatic, talking about things of mysterious occurrences, as only the Phantom Stranger can.
The spectral curtain of ebon night draws down upon All Hallows' Eve when fright blends with the light, and nothing is as it seems, for menace awaits, and the scent of mystery is on the mind.
Shaggy does what Shaggy does, meaning run away, but Dead Man takes control of him. The gang isn't convinced that somebody's controlling Shaggy. That's just the Dead Man thing. That's a little hard to explain. Except that Shaggy isn't hungry. So that convinces Fred right away that something creepy is going on.
Something supernatural is afoot.
So the Stranger and his buddy Dead Man have sought out the Scooby team because they need ghost hunters. I mean, think about it. Who are you going to call? Because ghosts across the DC universe have been disappearing. I think it's Velma who points out, well, yeah, that's what ghosts do.
Except this apparently is not on purpose, and the Phantom Stranger thinks they may have been ghost-napped.
Bow, 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 bow. We're talking the Grim Ghost, the Ghost Patrol. Kid Eternity and his guardian, Mr. Keeper. Captain Triumph, even villains like the Gentleman Ghost,
aka the classiest ghost.
They're gone. So Dead Man and the Stranger have come to Mystery Incorporated to solve the mystery and find these guys. And surprisingly, they actually do a little detective work.
Not at all.
Do they do?
They draw ectoplastic. Some dots. They connect some dots.
Well, yes. I mean, it involved connecting dots, but...
Okay, I just want to point
out... It counted as detective work for Scooby and the gang. It's as close as they get.
I'm pretty sure that this was issue one where Batman showed up and asked them, aren't you guys detectives? And they said, well, mostly we just sort of run around in circles. They're not great detectives.
Their coup de grace, their final move, is always pulling someone's mask off. I mean, they do have a thing, I guess, but... Anyway, so they literally connected some dots. And they found out that the center of the disappearances seems to be a town in the middle of nowhere, Silver Spur, Nevada, in Death Valley, which makes it a ghost town.
Bum, bum, bum!
the Phantom Stranger teleports them there, which is way faster than the Mystery Machine can go. They start their search in the most logical place, the jail. And they find them, because, you know, Scooby plots are usually not that complicated. They find the ghosts, but they're behind ghost bars.
Ooh.
Made of ectoplasm, and no one can escape from through these ghostly bars of ghostness. Daphne realizes that one of the beings behind bars is not a real ghost because she can't see through him. All right, he looks solid.
Actually, no, this, I will give Daphne points for this one, because one of the ghostly villains is Batman's villain, the Spook, who they had faced in a previous issue and they know is not a real ghost.
Ah,
so
why is he behind the bars? He would be able to go through the ectoplasm because he's not a real ghost.
So they pull his mask off.
Which is their move.
Discover the stranger's old foe, Tamarack.
The problem is, they usually pull the mask off on the last page, and here they got like 16 pages to go, so we know there's a lot more happening. So, Tamarack, the ancient alchemist who's lived for centuries, he tricks the Phantom Stranger, locking him in prison, which makes Tamarack's collection nearly complete. As collectors,
we know this feeling.
Deadman tries to sneak up on him, and he is captured as well. But fortunately, as we know, there is one member of the DC Spiritual Supernatural Brigade above them all, our old buddy, the Spectre. So Phantom Stranger wonders what Tamarack is going to do when the Spectre takes notice of all of this. But Tamarack has already captured him.
What? How?
What will our heroes do now? It turns out that Tamarack was able to separate the Spectre from Jim Corrigan. Let's not get into little things like continuity here.
Or death.
And power sets and death. But the longer he stays separated, the weaker the Spectre's powers become. Again, don't quibble.
It's a Scooby comic. Just go with it.
Back in Ghost Jail, Deadman takes over Daphne's body, and she somersaults her way right out of the jail and delivers what we call a kick-based consequence.
I think so.
To Tamarack. And before he can respond to her, Tamarack is met by
the awesome powers of
Spectre Doo.
Vengeance!
Fred exposits just what's happening here. The Spectre needed to recharge his energy by merging with a living host. But Tamarack hid the Spectre's human body. So the Spectre merged with Scooby instead. Understand?
I have questions. Jim's dead. So does Tamarack just have a dead body in his trunk?
Well, Tamarack wants to talk with the Spectre, maybe have a little parlay, but
Rocking Revolver!
I'm sorry, I'm just having a hard time understanding what you're saying.
Well, what will Rick Rome revive or free?
Still not understanding you.
So the ghosts are released, and they deliver some spectral consequences upon Tamarack.
Including the general from Haunted Tank and the entire Ghost Patrol. And then as Tamarack runs away, Shaggy uses his number one move, tripping him.
Yep.
And with a little help from Kid Eternity and the entire Third Roman Legion.
Again, I have questions.
They capture Tamarack, who would have gotten away with it if not for that meddling Kid Eternity. They find the body of Jim Corrigan. A little body switching occurs. Don't ask questions. And the Spectre craves Scooby Snacks. Dead Man and Velma discuss hook-handed men, while Fred uses his go-to move on the Spectre, removing his hood, and everyone screams. Because even though we don't see that, it's got to be...
horrifying.
Terrifying. It has to be awful in the original sense of that word. The great and terrible day. Everyone screams, and Shaggy wakes up.
It was all a dream.
And as trick-or-treaters arrive dressed as the Spectre and the Stranger and Dead Man, the real Scooby, the real Phantom Stranger, and the real Dead Man wish us Happy Halloween. Or...
Rappy Rollerine!
Okay, do you see now why when I read this on approximately October 15th?
Destiny.
I couldn't not talk about it.
I do.
That's why we have this podcast.
Oh, it's true. Scooby Team Up is not really my thing. It is.
It is my thing.
Yes, that is for sure. It is very much Brave and the Bold. And Brave and the Bold is not my thing. Yeah. I don't like
I don't like the silly
Aquaman. I don't really even like the silly Batman.
That's
like,
outrageous.
Outrageous indeed. It's just not my thing. But this story was perfect, I think. It is a weird book, but I mean, this is what you want from a book called Scooby-Doo Team Up, featuring the entire DC Universe. It is wacky, it is silly, it is zany, and it is fun.
I haven't read it, but I'm pretty sure one of the more recent ones has the Scooby Team and the Challengers of the Unknown. Another one of my favorite teams, so that one I'm looking forward to. This is just, to me, it's been a fun series all along. I mean, Ace the Bat-Hound is a major supporting character in this series. He and Scooby are buddies. I like that.
I don't think there's a better pitch.
Did I mention that one of the very early issues, maybe one or two, involved my man, Man-Bat? I mean, come on. I was a mark for this series literally from the first issue. And I've really enjoyed this one. I do kind of like that we quibble. Could Fred remove the Spectre's mask or helmet or helm or whatever?
Well,
cape, ghostly... But I like the fact that it terrorized the bleepity bleep out of them.
Well, and let's be honest. In Norbert Shaggy, whatever the heck his last name's, candy corn infused, like, daydreams. Anything's possible.
There you go. To me, this was a fun version of Dead Man. Fun version of the Phantom Stranger. And we can say, well, these were all Shaggy's dreams. They weren't. That's why. That's our excuse for a certain continuity situations.
Quibbles?
Some plot mechanics here or there. So how familiar were you with Kid Eternity? Or the Haunted Tank? Or any of these ghostly characters?
I didn't know any of these characters existed except for the Gentleman Ghost. Because he was featured heavily in the Gotham by Midnight annual, which we
that's
both
right,
love.
That's right.
There's a whole plot involving the Gentleman Ghost, and God, he has got such a great look. The classiest Phantom in existence? I think so.
Because a monocle just makes you look upscale and classy. And if you don't have to worry about the details of, like, the face around the monocle... You get just the monocle?
And top hat?
Perfect. Hello! That is a look that works. I confess I was not all that familiar with Kid Eternity or his power set. I assume it has to do with being able to call historical figures from all of eternity?
Yeah, see, I was under the impression that he was a ghost. I did not know that he was, in fact, apparently, a Pokemon master. Puns are terrible.
The puns are
like, I'm not saying they're bad.
Okay.
I'm saying they're terrible.
Yes, okay.
Not unlike the Spectre. Great and terrible. I made fun a little bit. I do love the logic of course, these ghosts, they're all converging in Death Valley. Of course that's the answer. Like, I love Scooby logic. In that, like cat logic, it has very little bearing to real logic.
And you get to your ghost town. Well, where would all the criminals be?
Jail.
Probably in jail, right?
I do at least like that somebody questions that. I think it's that.
Yeah.
I think so, it's Daphne, who's the voice of reason. It's like, oh yeah, because they're just going to be locked in a jail behind bars. Turn the page, and there they all are behind bars. Oh. Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I guess this is happening.
Beyond the specifics of this wacky, weird book, let me ask you this. We have talked about The Spectre and The Stranger and Dead Man, and those are probably pretty close to probably three of maybe the big five. For DC, it would probably be Constantine and Zatanna, sort of to round out
the most superpowered side of that
side of their universe. And it's when they do the Constantine crossover, that's when we'll know every shark has been jumped and their reboot is coming. That's got to be the last episode, right? When they bring back Kid Eternity for his seventh issue, and then we think maybe Constantine. So, but let me ask you this. What do you think of silly takes on these serious characters? You didn't like it in Brave and the Bold. What is it that worked here?
Part of it is tied to this being essentially an Elseworlds.
Right.
You know, that mm-hmm. the stuff that was happening, it was all a dream. And so there is that
true,
sort of...
That's true. You have that out, yes.
There's some in-universe justification for its silliness. But honestly, it's because it's a Scooby-Doo book.
Right.
You know, if you say Brave and the Bold, you're saying, well, this is a specific version of the real DC universe.
Mm.
And it's not a thing that I'm interested in. But if you say, we're going to take the DC universe and put it in a Scooby book and have it follow those specific, because there are rules.
Those rules and conventions.
We made jokes about Scooby logic and mask pulling off and the tropes of a Scooby book. But that sort of sets rules and parameters and guidelines for how things are going to work. I'm good with having these versions of characters in a different book.
Right.
Because, like, at the end of the day, it's just fun. Here's another version. Here's another funny, kid-friendly version of these characters. Like, not everything has to be dark and grim and serious all the time.
But if you want that... Scooby Apocalypse
here's is your there buddy. For you. You know?
I do think there's something fun about having all ages versions or kid-friendly versions of all of these characters. And I appreciate the fact that they're doing it with all of these characters. Where it's not just a kid-friendly version of Superman, a kid-friendly version of, you know, the big heavy hitters. To some extent, there's a correlation with DC superhero girls. The same idea, getting a light, friendly in to this world for a different age group, for a different demographic. Not that all of your books have to do that, but...
Variety is the spice of life, and that goes for all ages.
Mm-hmm.
That Scooby doesn't always have to be light and fun. You can have Scooby Apocalypse. The Spectre doesn't always have to be grim and serious. Sometimes you can bring the more fun back to the character.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I see what you did.
You can take that one to the bank.
But mostly, I just wanted to do this episode to hear your Scooby-Doo Spectre voice.
You're welcome. Sorry. We're welcome.
Good work. Again, I recommend not just this issue, but the entire run of what I've read so far. I've read the first three volumes of the first 18 issues of this. And I will say later in this volume, there is a team up with Aquaman, and it does involve Fred consistently trying to go to his final move,
I.e. pulling masks off?
Pulling masks off, unfortunately. They're at the bottom of the ocean. That's actually scuba gear. That would be a bad move, Fred. Bad move.
Fred, that will kill them, right? Right? Sorry? Sorry.
Force of habit.
Force of habit. This is not Scooby Apocalypse.
See? There you go. There you go. So you have to be willing to jump into the river of goofiness and let it carry you. I would say, if you liked the Brave and the Bold TV series, this is an easy in. Though, as Emily said, even if you are not necessarily a fan of that, this can still work for you. Well, that is about all that we have to say about our main topic for the episode. We are going to go over just a little bit of feedback. We do have awesome, generous, kind listeners who send us awesome, generous feedback. This time, those awesome, wonderful, kind feedbackers are all Nathaniel Wayne. We're going to go over a couple of his feedbacks. Nathaniel can be found at the Council of Geeks podcast and YouTube page. The first email he sent us is When Philosophizing Goes Bad. Thanks to a YouTube rabbit hole I tumbled down, I found myself becoming somewhat acquainted with Bill Gemmis's notorious limited series, Marvel. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of this thing.
Oh yes. Yeah, we have.
We have. But the short version is that it was created because Marvel president at the time, Bill Gemmis, bet Peter David that he could create a new comic that could outsell David's then current run on Captain Marvel. The resulting Marvel started out as a bizarre parody comic for two issues, and then took a drastic shift into a quest for God and pontificating on the origins of life for the latter four issues. And most of the covers featured naked, or nearly naked women, engaged in poses and activities that had little to do with what was going on in the comic itself. It made me wonder if you two ever thought to dip your toes into the overwhelming comic or pop culture work where the religious or philosophical message either derails the story or prevents it from ever having a shot at working in the first place. I mean, nicely interwoven themes of humanity or God or faith are all well and good, but what about the times when the message overruns the story? Bonus points for that message being confused, self-contradictory, or just nonsensical. I think one of the lessons from the Marvel situation is never write a comic book based around a bet. That's usually not a winning literary formula.
It very rarely ends well. Now, podcasts based around bets, that's where the money
is. Boom.
I am aware of Marvel. Since he said he went down a YouTube rabbit hole, I'm assuming from the same source that Nathaniel found out about it, which
he must
is
have found
Linkara
from atop the fourth wall.
Oh, and his feelings on Marvel are pretty similar to my own, which is, wow, this is bad comedy. Wow, this is not very funny. Wow, this is weird. Sir, are you high?
But other than that,
yeah, other than that, it's got weird. It's weird and bad, and it is bad weird. That book is terrible. You know what's the saddest thing about Marvel? Is it almost had a shot of being like a sort of semi-decent parody comic.
Mm.
And then it just went completely off the rails.
It is interesting. Another famous example of that would be Cerberus the Aardvark.
See, I wasn't going which to was say Dave Sim.
I mean, it was a Conan parody book for the first X number of issues. And as I talked about on that episode 100 of the Quarterbin, it has become known as the Cerberus effect, where something starts off light and humorous and satirical, and then as it goes on, I suspect, because that is really hard to do, that it just becomes more serious, either dark or grim, or maybe even the pendulum swinging so far to that end. In the case of Marvel, you had the covers telling one story,
mm-hmm.
The first couple of issues telling another story, and the last four issues telling a completely different story from either of those two. My understanding is, despite whatever the philosophizing and quality or lack of quality of the content, it was just a confused mess.
Basically. I think that's the takeaway, is if you're going to do something that is funny, satirical, or philosophical, if you want to go for all three, mm-hmm, be my mm-hmm. guest, have a plan. Like, at least Dave Sim had a plan.
Mm-hmm. I did reply to Nathaniel a little bit about Marvel in particular, the more broadly about sort of preaching or philosophy, philosophizing point of view in a pop culture work. And I said that in terms of message derailing a story, religious content can certainly do that, but it's not unique in that regard. Left, right, center, religious, atheist, objectivist, socialist, cultural, environmental, social, LGBTQ, diversity. We've seen plenty of stories where the message is so out front that it does, to some extent, hijack the narrative, as well as plenty of times where they manage to blend flawlessly, you know, all of those things. It's sometimes hard to tell why it works in some cases and why it doesn't work in other cases, other than maybe starting somewhere else, starting with story, starting with character, working in theme from that point. And I always think, again, whatever the content is, social, political, religious, etc., subtle is better than obvious when you're trying to put that message in a fictional context.
Mm-hmm.
That's always my preference. There can be a fine line when leading with theme works and when it doesn't work. And of course, how one feels about that particular theme influences that view as well. We're always more willing to accept the preaching, and I use that term in its broadest sense possible, preaching the theme, preaching the message, if it's a message we agree with.
But also, I have no interest in talking about Philip Pullman on this show, so, like, let's just move along.
Boom.
His other piece of feedback ties pretty close to our previous episode and to this episode.
Lucky episode 13.
His email is titled, Dark Justice League of Darkness versus the Darkest Dark.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know what that movie needed?
Mm?
Damien Dark. Then it would have been perfect. Sorry, what did Nathaniel say?
DC animated films. Oh, Middletons, you're in my house now. I reviewed this one back in May for my Animation Junkie series on the Council of Geeks YouTube channel and was so relieved that it was one of the better recent mm-hmm. animated films. By and large, the ones they made into a continuing continuity based on the New 52 have been, well, just atrocious. The only exceptions I've caught have been Batman Bad Blood, this one, and a few other good ones like Assault on Arkham and Gods and Monsters, which aren't actually tied to that continuity,
that helps.
Thus have freedom to be, you know, good. But this was a great time. Like, to the point that I might have had trouble holding up my honorary of professional buzzkill. But stick with me. I still have nits to pick.
Oh, yes, Nathaniel.
I'm sure you do. We'll come back to that later. Retaining Matt Ryan was a big win.
I do not know if you've heard.
Oh, I've heard.
Two things. One, a CW Seed animated.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe a Legends of Tomorrow appearance.
Two-parter.
Oh, yeah. Matt Ryan as Constantine.
Yes. I am so ready. I am so ready. Nathaniel says, while I wasn't in love with the Constantine TV show, mm-hmm. I feel like it was stuck in a format that was at least 5 years behind the curve, trying too hard to mimic things like Supernatural, Buffy, and maybe even House in terms of its structure. I did absolutely love Ryan in the part, and I'm crossing my fingers so hard that he gets onto the next season of Legends of Tomorrow, because
okay,
the producers
spoilers.
Have said they want him. There you go. Good news for you, Nathaniel.
Yes, I think in the 6 weeks since he sent this email, that has been all but confirmed.
Bringing back the same actor to voice Richie was also a nice touch. It did bum me out a little bit that they recast Felix Faust, mm-hmm. because I love Mark Margolis, right. ever since he was in Darren Aronofsky's debut film, Pi, which might be worth considering for this very show if you haven't seen it.
See? Listeners are always suggesting things to the never-ending
episode list. Nathaniel continues, I did get that they went with a pretty different take on the characters versus what had appeared in the show, mm-hmm. but that wizard duel was pretty epic. I also really enjoyed reimagining Dr. Destiny. I'm not sure if that was lifted from the New 52 comics or if the movie came up with that, but it was lovely. Mm. I'm pretty sure that that was original that version, mm-hmm. that movie. Because I haven't ever seen anything like that.
I don't remember that in the New 52.
And I loved it. Mm-hmm. That was great. This was also the best use of Batman in these New 52-based films by a country mile. His reacting to insane supernatural things by just standing there and going, in Batman tones was a glorious running joke. This is the thing about Batman. Batman doesn't always have to be super somber and serious, but the comedy in Batman needs to come from his deadpan-ness.
I mean, humor is best when it comes from character, and that's a perfect example of it.
And here we are. So those nitpicks. Well, there's a few. Boston's voice is really grating.
Nathaniel, you are not alone in this. Almost every overwhelmingly positive review I've read or heard of J.L. Dark pointed out that as the one thing that could potentially have pulled it down as the weak link.
It's a combination of the pitch and overdone accent, mm-hmm. and it grated on me pretty quickly, which is a shame because I like how the character was written. I also took issues with the depictions of Superman and most especially Wonder Woman, though I'll grant at least half of that had more to do with how I was reminded of the awfulness of their other appearances in this continuity.
Okay.
But something about how harshly judgmental Wonder Woman was towards the clearly scared woman who just mowed down the pedestrians because she thought they were demons, it irked me so much. Mm. I actually do agree on this. Mm. I didn't like the characterization of Wonder Woman, but again, that's because it's that character from all of the previous New 52 movies, which are not very good.
My pass a little bit on that is quick reaction. There's not a lot of time to investigate, to take the long view, and the first reaction may be a little harsh, as in, what just happened? What did he do? We have to get out of here. It's like there's not a lot of time for the long, in-depth discussion.
Yeah.
So I give that scene half a pass.
Yeah. As Nathaniel points out, she's the warrior who seeks the way of peace first, mm-hmm. and then made her look like she was ready to execute this poor panicked woman right there on the spot. Wrong! All wrong! For crying out loud, DC, why is Patty Jenkins the only person who understands? Okay, calming down. I'm all right. Or whatever passes for all right by my standards.
Yeah, Nathaniel, he has kind of a sliding scale.
This was a great show as always. M's love of Constantine shone especially bright.
Yeah.
And Professor Allen was also there.
Yeah.
Geekily yours, Nathaniel Wayne.
Huh? Yeah, I was there. Don't you forget it.
I think Nathaniel hit it on the head. There were three weak points. Boston's accent. Wonder Woman's glower of rage. It was not quite burning red eyes of anger, mm-hmm, but if they could have gotten away with it, they might have. And the poop monster.
Yeah.
So aside from those three, it was an excellent film.
And to hear more of Emily's thoughts on the Justice League Dark animated movie, head on over to the October 31st, 2017 edition of Batgirl to Oracle, in which I understand you out-talk Stella.
I really hope that actually comes out. Like, I'm going to be honest, I have not been so scared for an episode of anything to drop since, like, gosh, what was it? Episode 3 of Uncovering the Bronze Age, where I was kind of mean to Jack Kirby. This is my first commentary episode. I have no idea what it's going to sound like. I have no idea if it's actually synced up to the movie. Like, who knows? There's much she can do. It's a commentary track. There are no edits. But on the other hand,
there are no edits.
It's a commentary track. There are no edits. Well, and I'm really scared that I did not make very much sense.
Well, we will find out. If you have any feedback about Emily's performance on the upcoming Batgirl to Oracle, feel free to send that to us, too. CC us on that feedback as well. A nice short episode this time.
Yes. We've done some pretty epic records in the last 12 months, so hopefully we'll have a few shorter episodes.
It has always been part of our goals, and even to some extent our stated mandates, to not have super long episodes all the time over here on this one in particular. To sit down and record something even shorter than this when the mood strikes. So maybe this is the start of that. Who knows?
Who knows?
We will find out. So if you have any thoughts about Scooby-Doo Team-Up, Scooby-Doo Apocalypse,
Justice League Dark,
light Justice League Dark, or light versions of scary supernatural characters, we would love to hear that. And we will get to all of that in a future episode.
So thanks for listening. Happy Halloween.
God bless you guys. May the Force be with you.
And also with you.
While you're waiting for the next podcast episode, check out our websites. DarknessToLight.blogspot.com contains reviews, essays, and other similar ramblings.
And DarknessToLight.tumblr.com, which contains some of that material, as well as top tens, cool photographs, memes, and religious puns. We also run a general interest comic book podcast network, Relatively Geeky. That content can be found at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com or by searching iTunes for Relatively Geeky.
Let us know what you think of this topic, this episode, or this podcast in general. Feel free to send your thoughts to us at darknesstolight@gmail.com. We would also appreciate any ratings or reviews left for the podcast in the iTunes store to help like-minded people find us.
Our intro, outro, and promo music is by Anderson Kale. Check them out at andersonkale.com or search iTunes to purchase their music.
Thanks for listening.